I just got here, so, you know, that's because last week was the big social network meeting in Greece, and so I was there all week and came back to the States on Tuesday, woke up yesterday, and tried to wake up for today as I got back on a plane to come out here. So I have no idea what went on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, today, which is good, which is bad, I'm not really sure. Also, of course, you've been sitting here for 3.5 days, almost 4 days, and you're probably even more tired than I am. So this talk is going to be kind of light, and I'm going to have some fun stuff at the beginning, and then we'll get into some statistics and some new stuff that we've been doing, and please ask questions because I understand there's been very little statistics here. I like to think of statistics as the branch of applied mathematics where you can go jump off. Statistics is the branch of applied math where there are jobs. Okay. In fact, there are more jobs than we know what to do with. As a new department at IU, it's been kind of fun hiring. Good person can get an offer every place the good person goes. So if you want a job, just go back into the PhD and staff, and I'll promise you jobs. I've been doing networks for a very long time. I've been doing statistics for networks for a very long time, probably longer than some of you have been alive. Back when I started doing networks, statistics for networks, there were like 4 statisticians who cared about networks. Now there are about 20, which is good. There's now diversity, and I have more papers to review than, you know, just from the 3 other people working in the area. It's good, and some of the really hard problems that I'll mention later today are getting solved. Estimation problems, things to do with very large networks. We now actually have a good handle on some of the computing things that make the models that I'm interested in actually work. Networks, of course, are all over the place. These are kind of old quotes from sociology and from Moreno, who we sort of think of now as kind of the father of modern network analysis. Not Laszlo Barabasi. He did not discover networks. Stuff really does go back to the 20s and 30s, people who actually gather data. And I should say that I care about data, okay? Most statisticians care about data. Most modern statisticians care about data. They care about data. They don't necessarily care about proving theorems and about asymptotic behavior of various parameter estimates that when networks go off to size infinity, we really do care about data. We are overflowing with data these days, which means that statisticians have work to do. These are some cute little pictures that, cartoons that I got. I especially like the one over on the left, the group of, it's the tight little clique over there. Jacob Moreno was the psychiatrist, immigrated from Austria, living in New York in the 20s and 30s, who really did start drawing pictures. He invented the name sociogram, sociometry. These are his ideas. And there is a lovely piece that was in the New York Times in 1933. He's presented, some of you may have seen this, I almost always do this, some of you have been in other talks I've given. He presented his stuff. Remember, he was a psychiatrist. He presented his stuff at the meeting of physicians at the Waldorf Astoria in New York in 1933, which was written up very nicely in the New York Times. But because he was a psychiatrist, he didn't really care about the people who were well-connected or who were central to the group. You see, his focus, of course, are the isolates, like a good psychiatrist. These are the people that pay his salary. He had very grand plans for what he called psychological geography. This is actually the piece. It's a Xerox of a Xerox of a microfiche, so it's very hard to read. He had very grand plans. He, in this piece that he presented, the State Medical Society of New York, he talked about some of the studies he was doing.
Are you going to use larger fonts later?
This is an eye test. But I will read to you what it says. Dr. Moreno added that plans have been completed to chart a map of the psychological geography of New York City. So you can see that he was right there at the forefront of data gathering, and he had some grandiose plans. If you actually get a copy of his Bible, which was called Who Shall Survive, which was published by the publishing company that he owned in about five or six editions, if you get the last edition, and if you can find a good copy of the library, there are, you know, centerfolds, foldouts, big pictures of people interacting with other people. It's really kind of neat. So that's 1933 in the New York Times. This is 2003 in the New York Times. This was a piece that was published, what, about 3 years ago in the Sunday Times Magazine. But you can see this is a whole crowd of people. They're at a club. They are clubbing in Manhattan. The woman who is over there, I now know is Gwen Stefani. She sings, or at least tries to sing, and wears very little clothing. But in this club event, she was pushing a new line of purses that she had, I guess, designed for Le Sportsac. But you can see the people in this picture, few of them have circles around them depending on how important they are in this network of people who are interacting with other people. This was written up by a guy named William Middleton, who titled this very cute little piece, Popular Mechanics, which I really like. Moreno, of course, was the person who first talked about centrality and talked about isolates. He would have loved this himself. There's a very long story behind this, which is attached to a fellow named David Gibson, who's in the sociology department now at Harvard. Excuse me, now at Penn. He was at Harvard when he did this. He's now at Penn. What he did was sit in the mezzanine, the balcony of this club, with an array of cameras taking photographs of who was bumping into whom. This is such a photograph from his collection. He then turned that into a giant data set of human interaction. There's a good story behind that that his graduate students told me a couple years ago, but we're not going to get into it. I saw this thing about, was it last year or the year before? It was April of last year. And at first I thought this was an April Fool's joke. This is from the Digital Media Lab at MIT. This actually is something they did. These are doggies interacting with other doggies. Okay, SNF stands for Social Networking and Fur. I'm serious. This is, I told you this would be humorous. This is for real. This was a poster from a conference that was given by a couple of the graduate students in Sandy Petlin's lab. Sandy Petlin is at the Digital Media Lab at MIT. He was the first person that stuck RFID tags on people and had the RFID tags go on so that we knew whether or not person A was talking to person B. Okay? This is a device that's been used in a number of settings. He also outfitted some of the students in a class with video cameras as well. So in addition to knowing where everybody was, we had a video stream of interactions. They didn't put video cameras on the dogs, but they outfitted the doggies with nice little leashes so that when they went up and sniffed each other like doggies tend to do, we knew whether Rover was sniffing Phoebe. Okay? And the text, of course, of this is just wonderful, the idea being that, you know, people love their dogs, and dogs are icebreakers. They go up to other dogs without any notion of social inhibition. So this is just great. I don't know if this ever got written up, but it was certainly a poster at a conference. Networks, of course, are a big time these days. As you probably know, you wouldn't be here if you didn't know this. This is from a magazine called Business 2.0, which is kind of a popular press thing that Forbes puts out. They determined that the year 2004, the technology of the year was social network applications. Which, you know, I think was probably a pretty good guess given what MySpace sold for 2 years ago. Rupert bought it for $600 million. Facebook is now being floated on the open market. If you have $2 billion, you can buy Facebook. Facebook, of course, was started by two guys literally in their garage. but it is now the biggest hit on campus. You're not a cool student unless you walk around with your mobile phone in one hand and then easy access to all of your friends via Facebook. All of these things, of course, are nothing more than fancy programs, social software programs that allow people to interact with other people.
Is that you in the upper right?
Yeah, right. That's me. I like it because I'm on top of Kevin Bacon, who's over here. Kevin Bacon and Stan Milgram, who's the guy in the middle here, of course, invented network analysis as well through the 6 degrees of separation thing and the Kevin Bacon game. I guess they worked with Laszlo Garabasi too. I can make fun of Laszlo, he's my friend. You know, back 5 years ago when network analysis was actually invented. But there are a variety of companies out there that are trying hard to make money, maybe not quite as successful as MySpace and Facebook. Companies like Spoke and Visible Path, and the reason I'm not here is because I have a tie to Visible Path. These are sort of children of a company called 6 Degrees, which was around 7 or 8 years ago. This is Duncan Watts, who you may know, who is a physicist slash sociologist who's been at Columbia, but he's moving shortly to Yahoo Research in Berkeley. I think he's had it with academia. Everybody knows about the Kevin Bacon game, which of course is just another spin-off of Erdős numbers. How far you are away from Paul Erdős in terms of collaboration, how far you are away from Kevin Bacon in terms of being in movies with other actors. Just giant network processes. More gobbledygook from sociology. This, of course, is the punchline here that is, as a good statistician here, asymptotic properties in large networks usually are pretty boring. I'm much more interested in what we can tell from regular networks. This is from the Ad Health study. The Ad Health study was a thing that Bush the First would not fund. It was a $20 million proposal submitted to NICHD, it's what I call the sex and drugs and rock and roll study of teenagers, where you actually ask kids about their romantic contacts. You couldn't ask them who they were having sex with, but you could ask them who they were romantically linked to. Bush the First decided that this was certainly not something that should be funded by his administration, and Jesse Helms actually got up on the floor of the Senate and said, ain't no way, this is getting done mass day. This was from University of North Carolina. Hill. But things changed in 1992, and one of the first things that happened in March of 1993 was that this was funded. And it's actually a marvelous study of about 200,000 kids between 7th and 12th grade, a wonderful multi-stage cluster sample where we have information on friends and attribute information on the kids as well as romantic contacts. It's going to be the source of many, many theses in sociology and psychology for years to come, I think. This is one tiny little piece of it where the red dots are people, the yellow dots are the alters that these egos mention when they were surveyed. And of course, if this is all you had, you would have a very distorted picture of what actually is going on here. Excuse me, it's the red dots.
No, it's the yellow dots.
The red dots.
Why does everybody have two alter egos?
Because they were asked to name two people that they were romantically linked to.
Oh, so those all.
This is a subset of the big study. Excuse me?
So that was the egocentric.
Yes,
the red
that's.
One.
You want to go back? Okay. There we are. Okay. The reds are the respondents. They were asked to name the number of people they were romantically linked to. The reds are egos, the yellows are alters. Got it? Okay. Other question? Okay, good. So, but if you actually look at the big picture, you get all the little blue dots as well. There is this giant circular thing in the middle, which was described by a number of people who did the data analysis from the bigger study. It was in Time magazine about 2 years ago. This actual picture was in Time. It's kind of interesting. This is actually one school many schools that were part of this much larger study.
So who was friendships or what?
No, this is romantic.
Unreported.
This
the
is
ones
romantic.
That were.
Okay.
Now, blue is not unreported, but.
It was at the time that they asked those people, right?
Yes. All I wanted to do was show you what would happen if you just did a small sample,
oh,
each ego only giving you two alters.
Right. You don't see that.
So this looks like a cycle in the middle with trees attached to the nodes.
Right.
So
exactly.
It's exactly the same that you get as a. When you have a map from a set into finite set into itself, you get this kind of.
When you have what?
So you have a map from a finite set into itself. This is this. That's a classical.
Oh.
Okay. You get a cycle with trees attached
sure.
to it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And we can characterize this in a variety of different ways. It turns out the people aren't very far from each other in this particular network.
Do you have any idea what it is not there this way?
Excuse me?
This is a sample. Mm-hmm. So
this is not a sample. This is one school.
But there are edges that are still missing from this network.
Yes, there are edges that are still missing. This is just name two people and most that you're romantic.
So do they have any idea?
The actual survey had more than two. This
do
is just a piece
of
it.
What the missing structure looks like?
No, not off the top of my head. But I'm only using it for illustrative purposes.
Would that be an interesting question?
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting sampling question.
About the dynamics of measurement and what the error is.
Exactly.
Made.
Yes, this is a very limited fixed choice design, as we say, okay, which can mask a lot of structure. There's certainly a lot of literature on that.
So
yeah.
You take the data quality as is, or do you do anything?
That's a whole different question that I don't want to get into. Psychometric issues.
So you just take them as is?
I can send you to the right places. I mean, these are important questions.
Yeah, because if you do that like for the internet, you get the totally wrong answer.
Of course.
And that's like a lot simpler than asking kids.
Yes. There's much more randomness in this. That's exactly right. Yes.
Is that really a triangle there?
What? Where's the triangle?
Well, in a real high school, you'd expect a two triangle.
Yeah, you actually have some very interesting things. When you look at more complete networks and bring in gender and age, you get some very fascinating things. Okay?
Homosexual, bisexual.
There are triangles in life.
There are triangles in life, yes. And you see that with the bigger network. But
what
I don't want to talk about it.
Positive what would be the age for magic
connection? Oh. Okay.
Have you all seen this?
I didn't know that.
This is from the collection of math societies. This is April 2004. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but I like it. I like it. It's a great. I've used it as wallpaper for computers. April 2004 was the month of networks. So yeah. So you didn't know this. So says the American.
That's not April Fool's joke.
No. This is for real. SIAM did this, and this was a poster that they sold, and the issue. Of SIAM News for April 2004, it was all about networks. I like it because it's a cool picture, and there are some cool networks that are here that you may have seen, including a piece of the Ed Health study, which I'll play in a minute. This thing over here is the New York State Power Grid, which a number of people have looked at. It's like, you know, how the power companies feed off of each other. And Steve Strogatz, who's a physicist at Cornell, who's worked with John Kleinberg and Duncan Watts on a number of projects, had a nice little piece, editorial in the New York Times. When the power went out, when was it, August 2004? When did the power go out in the Northeast? It was something in Cleveland that blew, and the whole
right.
Northeast all the way up into Canada went kerplooey, and I was trying to teach in Ann Arbor, and we had no power, and we were supposed to go out and have beer that night, but all the breweries closed, so it was a problem. But this is... You can see from this about the dependencies that these power companies have with each other. That's that. This is predator-prey interactions. This is a real food web on who eats whom. That's what that is. The ecologists have been using these things, fortunately these days, to actually study such interactions. The Northeast. This is a larger high school from the Ed Health study. Okay. This also is romantic contacts. The not particularly easy to read. The colors are race. So as you can see, there are three colors: whites, purples, and darker colors. You can see that there is a fair amount of segregation based on race. You can also bring in age in this, but there are many different school systems that people have been looking at over the years. The data, I think, from the Ed Health study got published in about 2002, 2003. And this, which of course looks like a brain, is really the internet, at least some artist's depiction of what it is. So, that's that.
Actually, so question?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be a talk about this tomorrow, but we know what kind of analysis was done and published about the internet and how wrong it was, and we know it's wrong because we know how the internet works.
Yes.
Why would we trust comparable analysis done about systems that we don't know how they work for sure?
Such as?
Just anything that we don't know for sure. Biology and the internet, we know how it works, so we can check our answers. But how do we check our answers about high school?
Well, you can't. There is no right answer. Okay?
But there is a right answer for the internet, so we can check.
Yes, that's true. But those of us that work with in sociology and psychology where people are involved, there's a different level of randomness involved.
But what he's asking is, why do we trust a methodology which has been proven wrong in other areas in an era that we have no way of verifying or
falsifying? Well, I don't know what proving wrong means in these contexts.
I think that the reference is to certain types of models, right?
Yeah.
That's not what's being here.
This is data.
Yeah.
Period. Okay? Yeah, data have errors. Different kinds of errors arise when data are gathered, regardless of the system. Okay? You get more errors when you are dealing with people or collections of people than you do when you're dealing with physical units.
Yeah, maybe we'll get into that.
Physical systems. I'm not getting into that because
that's
not going to do that. These are just examples.
You're putting up pictures and you're quoting things.
Such as what?
Like the internet graph and Barabasi, for example, and he said there's some, he published in Nature that there's this giant router in the internet throw a packet in.
I'm not here to comment on that. I'm here to talk about data analysis. I'm here to talk about how one takes data.
Okay.
These are simply nothing more than depictions of data, and then actually simplifies it, which is what a good statistician does.
Okay.
Tries to find the signal in a mass of data. And I'll show you some attempts at doing that. I'll talk, if I have time, about how one might actually begin multiple imputation. That is, figuring out where data are missing. Missing nodes, missing links, stuff like that. Okay. Good. This, too, was a piece in the New York Times in October 2006. John Kleinberg, who now is the oracle at Ithaca. Given that he won a MacArthur Fellowship, we now have faith in what he says. But, you know, I mean, this is an interesting quote. We're witnessing a revolution in measurement. The new science and technology networks that can be studied, including email patterns, buying recommendations of commercial websites like Amazon, .. These are things that are of great interest and lend themselves to new techniques. MIT has this new program that's going to be called Web Science. Did you know about this? Yeah, which I thought was interesting. So, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
What is network analysis? Network analysis is a set of techniques for analyzing empirical data, obviously drawing heavily on graphic images and a wide variety of mathematical yet more stuff. I don't know if you saw this. This was recently. This was December 2006. New York Times, Sunday Magazine, Rewiring the Spy. about blogs and wikis and how they're connected and how good master spies pay attention to these things. And there are a variety of people that I think we could call network analysts that are working for NSA and CIA and FBI who are crunching this kind of stuff. I suppose this is not surprising at all, but it's happening. So this was a particularly interesting piece. Didn't talk about networks per se, but certainly talked about the kinds of information that are of interest to the intelligence community. This was very recent. We're actually playing around with this. I like this a great deal. If you watch this is Los Angeles, so I can do this, right? This was the Academy Awards from the end of February. This was in the New York Times the next day. The New York Times is really big on network pictures. I think it's just wonderful. It's a great source of data and pictures. But what this is who thanked whom? Okay? That's what this is. So these are the winners from the whatever Academy show back in February. And as you can see, people thanking the film company, the directors, the crew, the cast, the Academy itself, family. God's over here somewhere too. Lost God. But God's here. Everyone who
down
helped
here,
make
Al
the
Gore
film.
Is
where's
not,
God? Where's God?
Al Gore.
Al Gore. I'm not sure Al Gore, thank God. And Al Gore's here. Al Gore's documentary, of course. Yeah, God's up there. God's up there. A number of people thank God. So, I was going to try to keep divine intervention out of this. But there's God. So, I mean, this is kind of interesting. And what we're doing is actually looking at this. And you can get similar things going back about 20 years. So we called the Academy out here in LA and said, do you have such data, and how far back do you have it for different years? And sure enough, they've got transcripts of what everybody said as they got up there and before they got yanked off the stage. And so we're looking at this over time to see how it's changed, which I think is kind of interesting. So that was in the Times. I guess I can spend 20 seconds giving a bit of a commercial. This is one of the things that we're doing in Indiana. This is what we call the Network Bench, which has been funded by NSF. It's a collection of tools. I don't know if anybody else has talked about this. Did Alessandro talk about this? Okay. Alessandro's part of this as well. It's a collection of tools and a collection of data to do network analysis. And these are particular pictures of it. It's going to be a platform full of what my colleagues call algorithms, which allow you to do various things for networks. And this will be ready for prime time sometime early next year. We're actually playing with it in classes beginning this summer. So it actually will be pretty cool. It's called the Network Bench. You can find a link to it on net. And this is Visible Path. This is one of the things that I mentioned back when I was doing social network applications on an earlier slide. This is the latest incarnation of the software that this company that I've been working for is coming out with. It is like LinkedIn, if you know what LinkedIn is. What it does is it allows you to find paths from yourself to other people through intermediaries. And as you can see, you get cute little pictures, how many people you can reach, and the paths themselves then are weighted. Weighted with bars, as you can see over on the right-hand side, to tell you how likely it is that this path will allow you to contact the person that you're trying to contact. Whether or not this actually works and makes money remains to be seen, but it's a clever idea. It's taken a lot of capital and a lot of time, but it works better than LinkedIn, and LinkedIn is a big hit. LinkedIn actually made money last quarter, believe it or not. So there's money to be made. We'll see what happens. I don't know. But it's been kind of fun, especially when they actually do science, which they haven't done lately because all of the nice little engineers and programmers in Bangalore are busy putting this out. Two-thirds of the company is now in India, which is another story, but we're not going to go there.
How do you accumulate data for such a
such a thing?
Oh, the system records all the data. You go in, it actually grabs your Outlook files. So it knows who you've emailed, it knows who is in your contact list, it knows what kind of information you have about the people.
But that's if you want to interface with the system.
Yes, you have to agree to participate.
But
you
suppose,
isn't
the assumption that the other people that you might want to meet have also interfaced?
Yes, well, that's how these systems work. That's how LinkedIn works. You join the network. You give the network information. Excuse me?
I believe my future is going to be one of an isolated node.
Well, yeah, Marina would like you too. You know, I mean, they're therapists for you. That's fine. I think that's more expensive than using LinkedIn or Visible Pad, but that's okay. I can put on my psychology hat and we can talk about it. It's there.
There are actually studies that sort of first year students put their thing on Facebook. Then they realize there are all kinds of creeps out, which Lincoln wants to avoid, which I understand. And so,
actually, not on Facebook, on MySpace.
So what
Facebook membership is very restricted.
So
I mean, it's just your class at particular university.
So what they, well, you're right. So on MySpace, what they then do is they put on MySpace some secret code which tells you where you really find my social space.
Right. Yeah, they put the link to their Facebook
entry,
actually.
Yeah.
So in this sense, you might be joining.
I think we're all too old for Facebook and MySpace. As a parent, it's actually been interesting seeing my kids' Facebook stuff and MySpace, but we won't go there either. Okay, so network analysis has roots all over the place. Going back, of course, to the 30s, I've got physics down there at the bottom because I'm still not quite sure where it falls. With a question mark. So, you know, that all leads to, okay, so what? What can we do with the masses of network data that we're actually getting these days, including from Visible Path? And so I don't know why number four got there. I want to talk a bit about the stuff that I've been doing now for about 10 years. It revolves around statistical models for the random variables that we can use to represent the data that arise from various contexts. Statistical models have a lot of good features to them. Here are a few of them, not the least of which, of course, is the fact that there is formal assessment goodness of fit, which is lacking in much of the work that's being done, especially all of the work that's being done with computational models, where you end up working with pseudo data. Guiding principles, well, you know, everything I do is stochastic. I like to parameterize things where the parameters actually have some structural meaning. There has been this cottage industry, of course, in this field of looking at degrees, degree distributions, which I have a lot of trouble with. Such models, which really constitute just one small fraction of the large number of possible conditional uniform distributions that you can have for a graph, I don't think are particularly realistic. So we want models that do all sorts of things at once, allow us to focus on local aspects as well as global aspects, and have these parameters, this parameter structure, estimated from the data that then become interpretable. So I'm going to keep this really simple. I have to do some math, otherwise I think I don't get my airfare paid for here. So keeping this really simple, I'm going to assume I have a collection of time variables, which I will refer to as x, and I'm going to make these dichotomous binary random variables, so I'll keep it pretty simple. And I will also assume that I quite possibly have measurements on the nodes themselves, which I will call node attributes, call those things y, call the relational ties x's, okay? And recently there has been a third set of things which are often called settings, which are collections of these things, which allow you to do slightly more complicated models. The roots of all of this go back at least to the early 70s, although Alessandro pointed out to me that a lot of the stuff comes from just good old theorems and physics, which go way back, about collections of interacting variables. We will assume that two variables are associated if they're conditionally dependent, given everything else that you can condition on. We'll define a neighborhood as a set of mutually dependent variables, and a model nothing more than a collection of stochastic assumptions about particular neighborhoods. There is this lovely theorem, again, which has roots in statistical physics, from Hammersley and Clifford, which allows us to actually write down a probability, a distribution function, a multivariate probability function, for the entire collection of time variables, which we have labeled P star. I'll show it to you in a minute. And there are various permutations of this particular theme where you can condition on different things. So for example, if you want to think about probability models, distributions for the time variables conditional on the attributes, we typically call these things social selection models. So we allow the probabilities of ties to depend on the characteristics of the nodes involved, whether or not two people of the same gender interact with each other. Is that different than probabilities for interaction of people with different genders? Social selection. Social influence is actually exactly the other way around, where we model the probability of attitudes or behaviors that, if you've got people representing your nodes, people might have conditional on network ties. This is what's usually referred to as social influence. So for example, are you influenced by the people that you're tied to? Okay. Do you like the same movies because the buddies you have like this particular set of movies? Social influence, and slightly more complicated versions of this where we condition on other kinds of collections, which in the literature are referred to as settings. Interesting stuff that we can do these days. The social influence stuff actually goes back quite a while, but this approach, I think, is probably the best of the bunch. And there are other possibilities as well. I'm basically working with number one up there, models of the network itself, models of the individual behaviors. These are the things that I refer to as social influence models, which include things that are often called network autoregressions. There are these big, ugly linear models, which I have lots of problems with because of assumptions you have to make about error behavior. And also living here, of course, are models for degree distributions, which are special kinds of conditional uniform distributions which fall within this general framework as well. The model that one gets, this P-star model that one gets, from the Hammersley-Clifford theorem looks like this. It's not too horrible when you think about what you really have here. If you look at the exponential part, it's nothing more than a linear combination of these Z things. These Z things are network statistics. You have a variety of them which have gamma parameters associated with them. Okay? Then this whole thing is exponentiated and normed. That's what the is sitting out front there. The model itself, the summation is over all possible neighborhoods Q, neighborhoods as I defined it earlier. We are still working in the land of dichotomous measurements so that the X's are binary, consequently the Z's are indicator functions which are either zeros or ones. Okay.
And you have no three-body interactions or something. You just have pairs, edges.
No. It's actually much more involved than that.
Well, but
X
you
is,
have...
X is the entire collection of ties.
But you could
okay.
have observable.
So if I have...
N-body
if
oh, I could have N-body observable. So the Qs can be and bodies, but those are still sums of two body, what I would call, since it's
the basic unit is a relational tie.
Is
okay.
a relational tie.
My tie to you, okay.
Might be
your
mediated
tie to
by.
Phil, right.
Yes.
Got it?
Okay.
Different kinds of triads and tetrads and dun 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 dun. All of these things are structural effects.
Right, and it looks just like statistical physics, actually.
I know it does. I've learned something from Alessandro. Okay, good. To keep life simple, we tend to parameterize these things homogeneously so that the gammas, which are attached to specific configurations, are assumed to be equal. Otherwise, you quickly drown in parameters. For example, you would have a different parameter for each triad. So what we do is we tend to keep, here are possible triangles, so these are special cases of triads, a single parameter for each of these configurations. The Hammersley-Clifford theorem, when one parameterizes it homogeneously, it turns out that what matters for you are counts of things like edges and two stars and three stars and four stars and dot, 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 and triangles. These are the structural configurations which are parameterized by this particular theorem. You then end up with a, turns out, a Markov assumption. So what really matters is just your local neighborhood. And the model reduces to, with a homogeneous assumption, my subscripts up there, I apologize, are screwed up. These, of course, are all subscripts. And this is supposed to be a sigma. But what you have are parameters that are attached to counts or particular configurations. So it's a very simple special case of this P star family of distributions where the, as we say in statistics, the sufficient statistics are counts of particular structural effects. Okay?
What does it mean exactly
to
be Markov? Starting from a single node following these distributions?
No, this is Markov spatial assumption. This is not Markov in time. This is Markov, a spatial statistic thing. So, for example, if you are a plant in a field, which is what BSEG used to think about this back in the 70s, whether or not you get a particular disease depends only on whether the plants that are near you, nearest neighbors, have the disease. Okay? So, in terms of the network stuff, what matters are the ties that you have to others, the ties that come into you, and that's it. Okay, so it's your local neighborhood. Cool. This is all written up in a whole pile of places. I'll point you to this particular book, which came out 2 years ago, published by Cambridge. There are a pile of chapters in here that sort of bring you up to date on this stuff. It, surprisingly enough, it's hard for me to believe, but people are actually using this. I was in Greece last week at the big network meeting for, which goes on every year. It's been going on for about 30 years now. And I was really surprised how many people are using this particular framework. There have been problems that good statisticians have been tackling, people like Gary Robinson, Tom Snyders, and Mark Hancock. We now have some very nice packages which do what we call in statistics Markov chain Monte Carlo estimations related to Gibbs sampling, which comes from Bayesian assumptions. It's a particular way of getting maximum likelihood estimates when problems are hard, when there are no analytic solutions. But there are some very nice packages out there. StatNet is written in R. Siena is a particular thing, which has been coded by the group at Groningen, which is designed for dynamic networks over time. But if you focus on one particular time point, it turns out that this approach is equivalent to fitting P-star. We started out by doing pseudo-maximum likelihood estimation, which has problems, but it was a quick way into getting around our submissions, but we're doing things much better these days.
Is there anything known about Monte Carlo blockchain chain for this model?
Yes. Yeah, there's a fair amount known. And of course, as we start using this technology more, we'll learn more about how well it works. There are degeneracy problems, special cases that you have to worry about, but this is all relatively new within the last year and a half, I would say. Okay? There are certainly theorems about MCMC in general.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
But this is a giant state space. This is a giant state space.
But
so
it's not for instance, it mixes in polynomial time.
Your little PC runs a fairly long time, depending on various things. Okay? But if you keep the model simple, and there's lots of reasons for keeping models simple, it's not too many parameters, you can fit some interesting things. Okay? And do some stuff. Okay? Good. There are other approaches, too, that are being developed these days. There are different kinds of statistics known as alternating k-stars, which work a bit better than the old configurations, other degree functions, and more complicated neighborhood settings that people have been working on the last year and a half. Should I keep going or should I stop?
I think there's like 2 minutes.
I have 2 minutes. Okay, good. Okay, so let me tell you what we've done in 2 minutes, okay? This is what I call network imputation, which is something that a number of people have been working on. Not surprisingly, our work is being funded by ONR. And we use this as an example because this is something that everybody knows. And of course, everybody knows that this set of 19 people, there were others. There's actually a bigger network, which has about 35 in it, of people that plotted what happened on September 11th. The ties here come from post hoc stuff, obviously, of different kinds of interactions that these people had. This is all public stuff. And so, you know, we can ask a question, who are we missing?
Well, who in the Pentagon has the ties?
Excuse me?
Who in the Pentagon has the ties?
He's asking about the Pentagon, which was on the left.
That's the plane that went into the
Oh, I see.
That's what you're saying. There were four planes, right? Okay. Who are we missing? Nodes? Are we missing any links? I use this example because clearly there is more to it than this little set of 19. We know that for sure. And so what we've been doing is focusing on particular network statistics, such as the ones here, building distributions of these things, looking at distributions, coming up with approximate assumptions about the nature of these distributions, and then using dynamic programming algorithms to maximize likelihood functions in order to fill in where missing nodes and missing ties might actually be. And since I don't have any time, I'll skip all of this stuff.
If your network predicts I'm a terrorist, I'm not even allowed to question the data. Right?
Excuse me? I didn't hear what you said.
He said if your network predicts that he's a terrorist, he's not allowed to question the data.
That's right. We'll send you to Guantanamo.
Right. Those are your funders, not you.
Yeah. They've never given me any data. They say, go make up data. That's what they do. So I just want to show you the kinds of things you can do. So this is what you saw earlier. We identify which actors are most likely to have additional ties. Okay. It turns out that it was one from each plane. And then we asked what would happen if we remove those. Clearly, the network falls apart, not surprisingly. And then we said, well, what if we bring
What was the main key that identified those individuals? Why were they the ones most likely to have ties?
Because what we did was we built probability models using this particular set of statistics, and we said if we started dropping nodes, what would the effect be on the likelihood function? So that's what we're playing with, a likelihood function which we developed by using this particular set of statistics, and we're optimizing it in a variety of ways. Okay? It turns out that the statistics, when you look in at them as a set, are pretty close after transformation to multivariate normal things. So it's relatively easy to work with this. Other people have actually done this by using the P-star family and are doing multiple imputation with that, like stuff I just learned about last week in Greece. And so the greens and blues here are the nodes with additional links put in. The red lines are new links that we have imputed from our own. Okay. So there are a fair number of people that are working on this particular problem in various ways using relatively sophisticated technology. I think that's interesting. Okay, so that's enough.